Accession number 20010, reel 5.
Unreal 5. Yeah, he told me we wanted the figures, and that's how we'd work. So we'd done several jobs like that. And then I used to do the odd job on watercolour for Parker Gallery. And, you know, it was quite good. And then, through the territorials, I began to go to messes and, you know, other regiments, messes and that. And... started work doing figures for them, you know, making watercolours and paintings and what have you. So it developed and developed there, so it eventually took over the commercial art I was doing. And of course the army paid up on the nail, and in some cases when it was round about March time and they wanted something done and the job might take about a month or so, they'd pay me before I'd done the bloody job, because they had to make sure that they'd spent the money that they'd got. Otherwise, the Ministry of Defence cuts their money down. So I used to do well out of it, and working for the Guards and Royal Marines. Looked on as the Royal Marines' official, unofficial uniform artist I was looked on. Just finished a book with showing Royal Marine uniforms and that. I still do their Christmas card. You know, and all that. Do Christmas cards for all sorts of, you know, army I did in the past and that. So the job really has been a kind of a hobby in these, the last 30 years. It's been nothing else but army and that, and marvellous sort of social side. My wife. I always remember when I first worked for the Marines. The Marines were in Eastney Barracks with the guard on the gate with their white helmets and blue, and very smart and all this business. And I had to see Colonel Archdale, who was retired colonel of the Marines, looking after the museum, which was just inside the main gate at Eastney. So... sort of with him was a captain, he was then, Captain Alistair Donald, serving officer, right? So I took this job I was doing to take it into them and drove the gate, signed the guard, "Yes, sir. I have come to see Colonel Archdale." "Right, sir. Park your car over there, so and so," you know. And I thought, I don't know whether I'll... Didn't like open my mouth so much in case they knew that I was a bloody cockney. Anyway, the museum was just inside the gate, see. So anyway, I climbed up the stairs and done the sort of work I had to do, and then they gave me more work they wanted. So old Alistair Donald, Captain Donald, said to Charles, he said, "You'll come to lunch with in the officer's mess." I said, "I can't do that, sir," I said. He said, "Why not?" I said, "Well," I said, "can't I go with Colour Sergeant Stone into the sergeant's mess?" See? I said, "I'm a bit more used to that," I said, "being a sergeant in the army myself." "All right," he said, "you inverted snob." That's what happened. I had a marvellous time in the mess. Anyway, the next time I went, he said to me, "You're coming in the mess, whether you like it or not." And I did. And it's been marvellous ever since. And no side or anything like that. I don't alter my speech because it's ridiculous to do that. And absolutely, the Marines have been bloody marvellous. And so has the Guards. I've been in the officers' mess at the Chelsea Barracks, right? I've been at their Burns Night things. Met Prince Edward of old Lord Louis Mountbatten. At Alistair Donald's, Alistair Donald used to be Lord Louis Mountbatten's ADC. And when Alistair got married, right, to Rosemary, we were invited to the mess at the Eastney Barrack, and Lord Louis Mountbatten was there, so we met him. And since then, I've met Prince, the old Edward Prince, or, you know, the the Queen's husband, because he was Commander Commandant of the Royal Marines, and he's got all my figures in silver, I think, and been presented to the Queen through the police, that was, at Lewis, because we're making, I've done a hell of a lot of work for the police making the figures, these figures. That's how it's all been. So really speaking, it's been quite a nice, what you might call very lucky to have a job which is your hobby, and also that kind of social side to it.
Could I just ask you one final thing about mules, just going back to them, because as you know, I tape recorded a Bevin boy yesterday who was dealing with pit ponies, and I told you that story about them being frisky if they'd been on the surface.
Yeah.
Does that ring a bell with you?
Yes, you let them loose, you know, without actually working them, any animal gets frisky. So we, as we did with our mules, we always, you know, when you're in a rest area or something, you always work them and kept as normal. You usually find that when, say, a mule was sick and it had to be allowed loose, right, in a to run around, but sometimes it does happen, then you find once they get better, they are frisky and you have to really do something to bring them back to their natural state again. That does happen.
What do you have to do?
Well, you treat them like you would an unbroken mule. Not so bad usually, because they usually fall back, right? But they are frisky, and any animal is, I think.
Somebody who dealt with mules in the Chindits once told me that to control a mule, you might have to blow up its nostrils.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever come across that?
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's the way you sort of talk. That's our animal, both a horse, two horses together, will blow up each other's nostril. And it's as if they're talking to each other. And, yes, you give a nice little puff up the nose. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. It must be some way of, and usually an animal, you can quieten it sometimes by doing that.